Welcome to the Headstrong Talk Show for people managers who want to master the art of supporting their team's mental well-being. Whether you've got a team of 2 or 20, this is the podcast for you. Bringing you regular interviews with people managers, team members and relevant experts, sharing their insights and wisdom to help you navigate the world of supporting team mental well-being. So join your host, mental health educator Jonathan Pittam, for conversations that unearth the golden nuggets that help reduce mental health related absenteeism, presenteeism and staff turnover.
On today's episode of the Headstrong Talk Show, we're discussing the question of how to motivate your team to stay physically active whilst working from home. To explore this subject, I'm joined by my friend and associate, Peter Moorhead, who'll be sharing his insights around this question. After a long career as a soldier, Peter set up Celebrate Health and Fitness back in 2007, having qualified as an advanced personal trainer earlier that year. Since then, his team that includes 9 experienced personal trainers have been delivering gym-based outdoor and online fitness training for individual employees and small groups for companies in Buckinghamshire, Bedfordshire and Northamptonshire. Pete's also a qualified nutrition coach with Precision Nutrition, who rank amongst the best nutrition certification and coaching companies in the world. So today I'm joined by a chap who really knows what he's talking about when it comes to physical activity. Let's get stuck in. Okay, so hi to all my listeners and hi, Peter. Thanks for coming on to the Headstrong Talk Show today. Before we dive into the subject and the question of today, can you please give us all a little taste of what you've been up to today?
Oh, well, my day started quite early with a 7 o'clock Zoom fitness session with one of my clients who lives in Great Horwood, quite locally. And he was actually out in his garden to do his fitness session. He prefers to do it outside, although he's a bit crazy because it was actually raining this morning. But we had a good session with him doing circuit training and resistance training, free weights and abs exercises. And then I had something similar at 10:30 with another client doing pretty much the same routine. We did 1500 reps of abs and free weights. So I've had a bit of a physical day so far. I'm just ready for a bit of a relaxing chat with you now.
Brilliant. 1500 reps sounds like a lot, but I'm sure it's achievable with a man like you in charge, Peter. So to set the scene then, I'll throw a few facts and figures your way. Just set the scene for the conversation, because what we're talking about here is how to motivate your team members, or how managers can motivate their team members to stay physically active whilst working from home. Now, I know for me, I'm quite a fit and healthy person. I box, I do yoga, I do a lot of Olympic lifting, I swim. And even for me, someone who's quite active, this has been pretty difficult for me because a lot of those things are closed. No boxing, no swimming, no gyms. So it's been quite restrictive. And I've definitely gone from a 30-inch waist to a 32. So it's definitely going to cost me a few quid in new trousers. Unless once lockdown's lifted, I can get back into my 30-inch trousers. So what about you? Because you did mention when we spoke before that you'd put on a bit of timber as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say I can't fit into size 30 inch trousers since I was about 18, I think. But never mind, we won't go too far into that. Yes, I certainly put on a little bit of weight over the lockdown period. And that was pretty much as you've indicated, because of a change of the way we've had to do things. For most of my clients, I used to be training outdoors with them on a one-to-one basis, doing lots of running-based exercises. But of course, whether it's the perception or the reality, then lots of people haven't wanted to mix and do face-to-face interaction. So my running has been totally curtailed, and I kidded myself, like lots of people, that I could just carry on regardless. But my waist size has probably gone from a 34 to 36, which is not been too bad.
Maybe we can swap trousers or something. Well, I guess it's not all been bad news, though, because, I mean, despite the fact that you and I have both put on a few extra inches around the waist, it seems that people have actually become quite a lot more active during the lockdown. And if I give you a few facts and figures here. Now, I think the Public Health England have got the Couch to 5K app. Apparently there were, I think compared to in March until end of June last year, I think there was like 860,000 downloads compared to only 448,000 the year before. So a 92% increase on the amount of people downloading the app. Now, there's a difference between downloading an app and actually using an app, but it still looks like quite a good sign. ONS data, Office of National Statistics, we're spending more time in, I think it was March to April 2020, we're exercising more than we were the same time 5 years before, which is a good sign. And there was actually a study of, I think it was King's College London and Maury Ipsos study. I think there was just over 2,000 people, and half of them, like you and I, said they'd put on weight as well. So quite a few people, more people are exercising, but people are gaining weight understandably. And I think the last bit of research I looked at was AMRAC research for Virgin Media Ireland. And they found that people had turned to the internet more regularly for health-related information and support during lockdown. And I think 50% of people saying they'd access videos, blogs, podcasts, and social media to support their well-being. So clearly people were actually looking to find this information, which is good. And I think 2/3 took part in live online fitness and training classes as well. So, and a lot of them are planning on continuing to do so. So I think although it's been a tough situation, it might have opened up a lot of new avenues for people that they might not have considered before, such as all of the online stuff. So on our discussion, or actually before we go into that, what do you think of any of those statistics? Anything surprise you in there at all, Peter?
Not really. There are a couple of things that stand out for me and that I was certainly aware of when we first went into lockdown in the very warm spring of last year. I hate to say it because I know there are a lot of people in different circumstances, but for me, it felt a little bit like it was holiday mode because of that fantastic weather. And certainly, I suddenly found myself with nothing to do. And I've always been fortunate not to have a commute to do anyway, but I know a lot of people in the local area were the same. And I certainly saw evidence, never mind statistics, but evidence of lots of people out and about in the fresh air at the time when we were allowed to be exercising for an hour in our local areas. There were loads of people running and walking and just generally getting out into the fresh air. But I also noticed that over time that began to dwindle. And at the same sort of time as the booze subscriptions or the booze sales from the online retailers started rising and Netflix subscriptions kicked off as well, there was also a decline of people that were doing those physical activities. And, you know, some of the comments you mentioned then, 30% of people planning to continue. Yeah, lots of people plan to do these things. But the reality, I think, generally has been that a bit like the New Year's resolutions thing, it fades a bit and people become less enthusiastic. So therefore, they need a little bit more incentive and motivation to actually do something.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I remember about 10 years ago, I spent a year in Australia and I spent most of my time in Melbourne. And every day they had this thing that's called the TAN, and it's like a running track in the central Melbourne, and it would be packed because they were just mornings out there, afternoons. It was always just packed. And for me, my local park looked like that at the start of lockdown. And the operative word being at the start of lockdown, like you said, it started to dwindle off. But I think there's an important factor there because it shows that when you have something taken away from you, when you're suddenly not allowed to exercise as much, you want to do something more. So that could be an interesting element of psychology to think about, how when your window for doing something is smaller, you suddenly want to do it even more. So that's definitely something worth looking into. So, Peter, give me some examples then examples you've seen of businesses getting the physical activity right during the lockdown.
Yes, I suppose if I can use my key clients as an example, then what they did is they allowed their staff to contact us and to book fitness training sessions with us direct from remote training rather than from myself and my team visiting them and being in their gym available during the day. So apart from anything else, we were very fortunate, but also for that particular company, their employees were encouraged to continue to do their fitness training, but now changing to make it remote training. We introduced a few extra things to make it work to help them that we'll perhaps talk about that later on. But they had some challenges and incentives, some of which the company provided, some of which we did. We started something called a resolutions program at the beginning of the year, launched from the 6th of January, where there are some cash incentives to help people, you know, become motivated. So they have a goal of achieving their goals, but also a reward for their goals. So, for example, we have a cash prize for the one that loses the most weight the male and female relative to their actual body size, rather than just a 15 stone person losing 5 stone and a 7 stone person only losing 1 stone, so they don't win, if you see what I mean. So a realistic compensation for them putting some effort into the training. We have a prize for the best beginner to incentivize people who weren't the normal gym goers, or not the ones who would normally take us up on our face-to-face PT sessions. And that's been pretty good. So we achieved out of our, I think there were 23 people in that particular company that signed up to the Resolutions program, and 7 of them were absolute beginners, which was fantastic. So that was one thing. The other thing that we find is working successfully is when companies are setting aside time for people to allow them to do this kind of thing. For example, I know of 1 or 2 companies that say, okay, there's no meetings or no online meetings before 9 o'clock or after 5 o'clock, to allow what used to be that commuting time for something else, and encouraging exercise, etc., during that time as well, which is always a good time at the beginning or the end of the day for people on their working days. And as it happens, the company boss of our major client, as I mentioned, he continued to actually train with me. I used to go for regular runs with him on a Monday morning, and it was a great time to catch up. And again, we were allowed to do that, you know, through running 2 meters apart, but it was actually outdoor exercise, which we could continue to do. So apart from allowing extra time and providing incentives, then the companies that are doing that, we find, are the ones that are succeeding in getting their employees motivated to do some stuff with us.
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, that's the 2 really interesting points then. So I think the first thing to pick up on then about the leadership actually being fitness people, because I guess in most organizations, you're not always going to have the MD or chief exec as someone who's a fitness advocate. So I think that's a really key part. How much of a role do you think that's played, that person being such a fitness advocate, in terms of getting everybody else in the organization involved?
Yes, absolutely. It's a good point. And of course, the more senior that person is, the fitness advocate, as you call them, I call them workplace champions. It just needs to be somebody that is enthusiastic about their fitness, and quite often somebody that you wouldn't necessarily choose as an athletic type, but just somebody that has done some fitness training and it's really worked for them and it's fired them up and made them feel like telling other people about it so they can join in. A case in point of that is, I have a Zumba instructor, and she was a client of mine some time ago, and she enjoys pretty much the fitness activity of Zumba. And before Zumba came along, it was the aerobic stuff, but now it's Zumba. And she lost a lot of weight and became fit herself, and then became the workplace champion for her place of work. And now she's actually running the online Zumba classes for us, for our clients. And that's the kind of person you need. As I say, it really helps if it's somebody high up in the management, preferably on the board level, so we can look at top-down approach. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that.
That's an interesting point then. So, because I guess there might be a lot of managers listening who are thinking, I'd like my team to be more physically active. I know role modeling is important, but maybe they're not fitness people. So you're saying they could look for someone else within the team or the organization that could be that advocate that is really into the fitness, and that could be the person that inspires and leads the other person down that route.
Yes, exactly. And the important thing is, if that manager isn't the somebody that you're describing there, that he or she supports the workplace champion in their efforts and make sure that that enthusiasm is communicated amongst the colleagues in that company.
So they could almost be the Robin to the health champions Batman, almost.
if you like.
I say that because for our listeners, because you obviously can't see Peter, but he's wearing a Spider-Man themed jacket, or it looks quite like Spider-Man, but almost like Venom, the evil Spider-Man. Say no more.
Oh, I see. It's that because it's black.
Yeah, exactly. So what about then, another point you raised there that's interesting then, about these incentives? And I think that's a really good angle, because it's not, I know,
we all need a reason to want to exercise as well. And I think it's finding out the most important, what works for that person, what ties into their values, what's meaningful to them, is a really good way to get people started exercising or moving who aren't typically inclined to do so. Because the fitness people in the company, well, they're the type that will jump at anything, won't they? They'll take part in the fitness incentives that are going on always. But then it's, how do you get the rest of those people? So have you found that the incentives are quite an effective route to go down?
Yes, I looked into the best sort of incentives to offer people at work. And not surprisingly, perhaps the favorite one was some sort of cash incentive. The next one was extra holiday or time off incentives. But that could have a repercussions on the other people in the team and you know, the cost of paying for people to go on take a holiday, etc. So the kind of incentives we're looking at were not necessarily big cash benefits, but just enough to make it worthwhile, sort of £50 or £100 or whatever, not necessarily that much, but just something to reward or to give them something to aim for. If I'm giving up my time and there's a reward at the end of it, then that's just a little bit of incentive. But the most important thing for all of this is to attract them in the first place. And that really starts with conversation, as always. It's, you know, the person who's the shrinking violet in the background and the one that you know is not likely to want to join in, trying to find out something that he or she likes doing and seeing if it's possible to get that type of engagement with that person. And although we're talking mostly about remote training here, there are possibilities for in-person outdoor training, and a beginner type exercise could probably be just going for a walk, just having a walk with somebody. And it's not just the physical exercise that is beneficial, but also a chance for that person to get away from their desk to have a conversation where they're not under pressures of work. This always starts with a conversation, and we like to group people together that have the same kind of aspirations and goals and desires. So you don't have to be pushing out 1500 reps in a circuit training session to achieve some fitness benefits, but it could be just taking a 15-minute walk outside for a chat with somebody away from the office environment. Yeah, hopefully that answers your question.
It does, yeah. I like what you've said there. Two things, really: tapping into people's values, what's important to that person, rather than just assumptions that it's all about weight loss for people, because exercise can go beyond that in terms of the benefits. If, let's say, you've got someone who isn't motivated by weight loss, you might have someone who's motivated by setting good example for how to be healthy for their children. And I think that's where what you've just said about the conversations comes in, because you unearth those values through the conversations with people, rather than assuming a one size fits all, everybody exercises to lose weight. So I think that's a really, really interesting approach. And the fact that you've mentioned, you're taking it beyond, it's not, people think of the E word, exercise. I think, oh no, squats, push-ups, deadlifts. But you've mentioned just going for a walk there. And I think that's key, because physical activity is just movement. It's thinking of various forms of movement rather than it having to be a specific type of exercise. Getting people moving is probably the most important thing. So what about then? We talked about an example of a company getting it right. What about examples you've seen where companies aren't getting it right?
Yeah, that's perhaps a more difficult one, because I don't tend to deal with them directly, but I can give you a few pointers on that. I would imagine from, again, those individuals who work at companies, when I talk to them about the possibility of doing some stuff with them, they would be the ones that are saying, I never get any time to do anything. So my response to that would be, if the company is looking to do better, to allocate some time. We've already used an example before and after regular working hours. And there's a possibility, for example, to say, we'll keep Wednesday afternoons free of all meetings so people can be incentivized to take that time out to do some exercise. I think another thing that strikes as a common theme is, again, people saying that I'm not allowed to leave my desk. You know, my boss, my management, my whatever expects me to even sit at my desk when I'm having a break. So again, this comes back to the time thing again. It's companies that don't allow their staff the freedom of movement, perhaps, or the time to do something other than being chained to their desks, literally chained to their desks, perhaps. And of course, the other thing is a little bit to do with attitude. It's the opposite of the workplace champion. It's the mood hoover that will say, you know, it's a complete waste of time doing exercise. You don't come here to exercise. You come here to work. And, you know, I want you to sit at your desk and get on with it. So, again, that kind of negative attitude, as if it's coming from top down, is quite detrimental to any
incentivized activities.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that kind of attitude is detrimental to incentivizing the staff to do anything in terms of exercise.
Yeah. And I guess when you've got, yeah, it's interesting about, you know, certain people who aren't interested in exercise, but maybe a lot of the time it might be because it's less obvious the benefits. When you think about exercise, you think, well, why am I going to let people have an hour out to do exercise when they could be spend that hour at their desk? But I think it's all the indirect benefits you get from that. Because if I give an example, many years ago after university, I worked for a company, and the boss used to say, if you go to the gym before work, you can start at 9 a.m. rather than 8 a.m. So a load of us used to, well, this when I lived in Birmingham, we'd go to the Virgin Gym on the Hagley Road, and we'd be in the gym, exercise in the morning, we'd have our sauna afterwards, a bit of a jacuzzi as well, and we'd go into work all fired up for the day, completely charged up, whereas those who didn't do that were the ones who, you know, go outside, have their cigarette to get their mind fired up, have their coffee to get them fired up. The most productive were the ones that went to the gym first, but they actually worked an hour less every day. But it didn't matter that they worked an hour less because of what they did in the morning at the gym. That made them so much more productive. And I think it seems like hard to get your head around. But I guess once you've seen it, it becomes clearly obvious. Why wouldn't you fire up people's batteries in the morning so they can work harder or faster or more effectively all day long? So I think that's really key. And this thing about replacing the morning commute or the evening commute with work, I think that time could be really well spent if it was based on people's well-being, because if we know we look after the person will be more happy, more engaged and more productive at work anyway.
Yes, absolutely. You talk about productivity. Of course, that's something that resonates with managers or finance directors or whatever. They're always looking at improving the bottom line through better productivity. You mentioned how energized you felt having been to the gym in the morning. And I would agree with that entirely. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the morning. Most people that I talk to tend to have a little bit of a flat time during the day, a sort of mid-morning time when people would naturally start to reach for the caffeine stimulation, if you like, and mid-afternoon in the same sort of way, the lull between lunch and going home when people's blood sugars tend to drop and everything else, and they start to lose focus and become less energetic. But and these benefits that come from taking some time out and exercising will show in terms of more energy, as we said, better focus and better resilience to injury and illness. I know resilience is a theme for you as it is for me, but in terms of physical resilience, rather than companies tend to think of resilience in terms of their business's ability to bounce back after some form of disaster. Well, I'm talking about the same on a personal level. So we can improve resilience by making sure people exercise. And we all know actually deep down that the amount of effort people put into their work is not related to the amount of hours they sit at the desk. It's giving them a reason to feel energized, to feel awake, and to want to do stuff better. Never mind the links to mental health benefits. You know, this kind of improved mental health means better engagement, better focus, less mood swings, reduced absenteeism, and ultimately better retention of staff. So all these things are benefits of bringing in exercise into the work environment and allowing the staff and encouraging to take up some exercise during the working day.
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, I like the fact you talked about the psychological aspect, the mood element, because I think the thing is, when you exercise, for the most part, if you're doing something you enjoy, you feel good afterwards. And when you feel good, you tend to eat differently as well. I know my diet is completely different if I'm in a happy mood, high mood, versus if I'm having a bit of a naff day. So yeah. The exercise sets you up for eating well, and how you eat has a massive impact on how you feel and how much energy you've got, both physically and mentally. So I think it's one of those things that's so important to keep to have as one of the core elements that the team members are managing. But it seems it goes back to that thing. It's hard to see directly the benefits, if you get what I mean. It's not, you can't immediately see someone goes to the gym and they sell more, or they're better with clients, or that, you know, their customer service is better, or they produce better projects or something like that. But it's one of those things we have to be aware of, the indirect benefits, the fact that people's mood is lifted. If someone's mood's lift, they're going to be a far more effective salesperson or whatever it is they're doing. How would you say what would you say to persuade, if you could persuade managers of the benefits of a physically active team, what would you say?
I think we talked about some of those already, but you mentioned the psychological benefits. I think I always look at I've already mentioned the shrinking violet type person, not the one that's going to jump forward and say, yes, I'll do that, but those ones that sit more in the background and stay quiet when you talk about this kind of thing. And most companies want to develop some sort of team relationship. And in a work environment, often it's only work that influences the team. But if you can give them a shared experience, especially if there's an element of hardship or physicality involved in it, then it does help develop team spirit. And with that comes more confidence and self-belief. And all that breeds success. So these are benefits that are not easy, not tangible as such, but are definitely there. If you sit back and look upon that shrinking violet, really coming out of themselves and becoming an active part of the team, all of a sudden, somebody that wasn't a great deal of benefit to the team and to the company as a whole becomes somebody that actually, oh yeah, so-and-so is really great at that. And yeah, I want that person on my team. And this connection with others and the social interaction that involves is very important to the psychological benefits of just exercise. You know, it's not something that necessarily springs to mind immediately, but actually probably the psychological benefit of exercise, especially when it's in a shared experience, as I've said, are probably even greater than the physical benefits of exercise. And I know mental health is more your theme than mine, but there's a definite correlation between physical activity and better mental health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The connection. I mean, I you know, think of it as one thing, mind and body. You know, what you do to your with your body affects the mind, how you think affects the body. So it's all one system. And I think, yeah, this thing about with the benefits that we get psychologically are huge. Because I'll give you an example. For me this morning, woke up fairly fresh, but didn't have feel that energetic, but put on my tracksuit and just went and ran up. There's a huge hill just around the corner. Came home, once I'd stretched out and the pain had gone out of my knees, I felt on fire. I don't need, when I exercise them, I don't need any form of caffeine, you know, coffee, tea, all that sort of stuff. I'm just buzzing with energy all day long. Whereas if I haven't exercised, then it's completely different. So in terms of the mental energy and the focus that we're able to achieve, I think when we exercise, it can't really, really can't be understated. And to touch on what you said about the team building thing and the shared hardship, I imagine that means you really punish the people that come to your fitness classes. I think the shared hardship thing is really key, because when you do something tough with other people and maybe you're pushing each other outside your comfort zone, it does help you to bond, and it does show you what people are all about as well. And it does help people to realize what they're all about. Because I know when I've done very grueling things, whether in the boxing world, it tells you a lot about yourself, and it really does push you outside of your comfort zone. And those benefits of that growth completely relate right back to the workplace as well, about being able to step outside of our comfort zones. So when we talk about physical activity, we focus a lot on weight loss and all that sort of thing, well, and fitness as well. But what about the other things we can achieve through exercise? What do you think are some of the key things that the people work with you, what are the key benefits they take away from working with you?
Good question. Yes, you're absolutely right by saying that most people want to achieve some sort of weight loss, and that's the reason why most people tend to go to the gym. as well. But I have to tell you, the reality with the majority of people that I train with actually just want somebody to be there for them, to help someone to help motivate them. But also the accountability thing is probably the most important thing of all. And if, for example, you mentioned right at the beginning of this, all the apps and things that are available, and there's so much stuff, for example, on Sky. If you've got Sky TV, for example, you can just tap into videos. But it's all one way. It's just coming from the screen to you or coming from your phone to you. And there isn't any interaction. Of course, there are things that combine the social elements as well. But when it's a remote training or one-to-one training, you have somebody there on the other side of the screen that's actually going to listen to you, to relate to you, to hear what you're saying, to feel your pain, if you like, and to and to react. There's the social element of it as well. But also, I hear time and time again from my clients, when I said to them, have you been practicing these exercises since I last saw you? And they'll say, no, or I have, because I knew you were going to come today and ask me that question. This is the accountability that I'm talking about. And in the good old days of being a soldier in my past, I used to have a jail that I could put people in if I felt like it, if they didn't do as I told them to do. Nowadays, it's nowhere near as intimidating as that. It's just a little bit of, oh, if I don't do it, I've got to tell that person. Just a little bit of accountability like that. And coming back to the team thing in the work environment, if we have a group of people from the company that are having a shared fitness session, like, for example, the Zumba class that I mentioned, that's got nothing to do with being imprisoned if you fail to turn up. It's just not wanting to let your other mates down, that when you've said you're going to be there. And not only do they have the accountability thing, but also when they're there, they have a good laugh and join in, and there's good camaraderie, there's great, you know, self-confidence building. I don't know if you've ever done a Zumba class of dancing around. I'm completely rubbish at it, but you can be rubbish at it and still have a great time because it's fun. You know, the jumping around to music is actually quite fun.
I can imagine.
It's very different sort of thing I do.
I can imagine you're in that category for Zumba Gold now as well, aren't you? I don't think I'm not in the gold. I've got 20 years. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that.
Zumba Gold, ladies and gentlemen. Zumba Gold.
I might even be pushing platinum at the moment, to be honest, but there you go.
with a Zimmer frame and some house music in the background.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned about the accountability bit to teammates, because I think let's say if I just go and download a yoga video on YouTube or something like that, I could not do it. I could switch it on and think after 5 minutes, I'm bored of this, or this is getting too hard. But when you're doing something with your teammates, not only are they going to say, well, wait a minute, Peter, where were you this morning at our Zoom session? Why weren't you there? So I think that's really key, because yes, you know, you've got to be accountable to the other people, because you're doing this as a team. And if you don't turn up, then you're kind of letting the team down. And I think it could be just that little bit that just nudges people. For example, when I used to be in the fitness world and ran boot camps in the morning, it was like we were just like a team. And if somebody didn't turn up because it was raining, they thought, oh, I can't be bothered today. That little bit of thinking, well, if I don't go, I'm going to get loads of text messages asking me where I am. I'm going to get loads of grief when I go back to the session next time. And I think just that little nudge can be enough to remind people to spur them into action, which wouldn't happen if they were doing it just passively on their own to a video online. So I guess my next question for you is then, how can we, or what do you think are the most common barriers to people taking part in online exercise? Because this is where we are now. People are training through Zoom. It's digital fitness. What do you think are the key barriers that stop people?
Yeah, that's, again, it's another good question. And if I think about my own perception, I think especially, dare I say, with older people like me, for example, a little bit of fear of the technology, just thinking, oh, I don't know how this is going to work. It's going to be fiddly. I'm going to have to faff around with it. It won't work and I'll be embarrassed. There's always an element of that with learning something new with tech. And I guess younger people just get on with it. You know, I always ask my grandchildren if I need them to get something working for me. Unfortunately, they weren't here today, but I did figure out where to plug in the headphones in the end. But I soon found by just using it and practicing it, then that fear of the use of Zoom, and I'm even using Microsoft Teams now. Hey, how about that? Works quite well. Never mind Google and all the rest of the stuff that you get. The other thing I think is perhaps the most common, and not, you would think that it's mostly women, but it's not necessarily true. There are a lot of guys as well that don't want to see themselves on camera, a little bit like looking in the mirror and not liking what you see, and then not wanting other people to see that, you know, your own shape jumping up and down in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's always possible to turn the camera off, but it's a little bit more challenging to do a class for interaction of fitness training, for example, when this camera is only one way. So that's the other thing. Then there are a few other smaller things that usually overcome a lack of space. I don't know how big your study is that you're working in. Mine has just about got enough space in here. I've got maybe about length in front of my desk of maybe 5 or 6 feet and a depth of about 3 or 4 feet. That's enough actually to do most exercise routines, but people think they haven't got the space. Mm-hmm. And then there's the family distractions. That's probably the last thing I'll mention. People working from home in particular. We've all seen the video clips of the dog walking across the, you know, or the child running in with a nappy hanging around its backside and all the rest of the stuff, or the postie coming to the door during a conference call or whatever. And that's amusing. And that makes it just a little bit more human, I think. But we're talking about the other things, like it's tea time for the children and they're screaming and they need the attention, or it's time that the wife comes home from work and you've got to make sure food is ready and all that sort of stuff. And you've been interrupted by calls from work as well. So this kind of comes back to why it's important to have scheduled time for these workout sessions.
Yeah, because I think that's really important, actually. If somebody has agreed the time to exercise with their work, and also they know that's at a set time, they can then make preparations for the kids to be maybe with the other parent or doing some their homeschooling or something at that period of time. And I guess they can have that specific bit of space to themselves as well, because when it's, yeah, if it's more of an ad hoc thing, it's probably a bit harder to manage. So when you know you've got a set time where you're meeting your team members to do this, I guess it's probably a bit easier to coordinate the environment, should we say, all around the person. Yeah. What about
all these barriers can be overcome. It just takes a little bit of imagination, a little bit of cooperation, and a little bit of can-do attitude to make it work.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing with these sort of things. I know we can feel quite self-conscious when we're on camera, but it does, after a while, just do it a few times, it becomes normal. And you can even, I guess it's not ideal, but if someone's taking part in a fitness session, they could just turn up and be the one who doesn't have their camera on or their mic on for the first few, couldn't they? Get used to it. And then as their confidence grows, then maybe they could turn on their mic. And then the next couple of sessions, they could maybe turn on their camera. It doesn't have to be everything immediately, does it?
I suppose out of this, that the people will get the impression that I'm talking about, certainly what I'm talking about, would be more group training sessions. But the reality of it is the vast majority of our clients that we work with are on a one-to-one basis. So the fact that they might see themselves on their screen, whether it's a large screen or a small screen, isn't such an issue as long as they don't think other people are going to see them. Again, it comes down to the self-confidence, et cetera, et cetera. But just by doing it, once a person gets to know myself or our personal trainers, then there's not generally a problem. And sometimes you then get two or three people working together for a fitness Zoom session. And sometimes when it's, for example, the Zumba that I mentioned, then there are 5 or 6 of them all leaping about, and they're the ones that don't care whether they seem to be leaping about or not. But it doesn't have to be group training. The point is what I'm saying. It can be individuals, one-to-one training, especially when it's working from home.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the key, isn't it? With this new world we find ourselves in, it's being flexible in the way you're willing to consume the exercise. And I guess from your angle, being flexible from the way you're willing to deliver it as well. So it's this face-to-face, there's Zoom, there's Microsoft Teams, there's a whole host of options available. What about mm-hmm. then? What would you say? So you've got a manager who, or even you say you're a manager who's got a team, you want them to be more physically active because you see the benefits in that in terms of their work performance, their well-being, etc. How would you motivate them to do this then? What would be your top three? What would be your top three suggestions for motivating them?
How to motivate the managers to encourage the teams to do this.
You're a manager, you've got a team that you want to motivate to be physically active, and you've got a variety of personalities in that team. Give us just a few suggestions of tricks you might pull out of your motivational bag.
Okay, as always, it starts with a conversation, just see who might be interested in doing it. And again, if that manager can find a workplace champion, pretty much handing over the conversation, leading the conversation to that person to let them show some of their enthusiasm to doing the fitness training in question. But most of all, it has to be fun and achievable. We talked before about 15 minutes walking versus 1500 reps of circuit training. But if you're grouping people together, then you can't put the 15-minute walker with the 1500 circuit training person because it just wouldn't work. And one or the other, and probably both of them, one would find that he or she couldn't keep up, and the other one would think this is too easy, and both of them would fall out of it. So if we're talking grouping people together, then it has to be putting people of like levels of experience and ability together. And it has to be fun. And so the exercise perception is, again, I think you mentioned earlier on, exercise is actually movement. As long as people are moving, it doesn't have to be anything to do with lifting weights or doing squats or doing hundreds of sit-ups on the floor. It can be something much more simple than that. I've even had a client that way back in the past, that viewed fishing as an exercise. Now, I wouldn't have said it was an overly taxing exercise, but I suppose he was casting his line in on a few occasions and having to reel in that whale now and again. But that to him was his exercise. But do you know what? Even though it might not have been physically rewarding for him, he certainly got a hell of a lot of benefit from the mental health aspect to it as well. But there is such a lot that can be done to help people. You know, we talked about, again, in the past, of giving it top-down support to helping that enthusiastic workplace champion to promote what it is that they're looking to do, and making some element of accountability, for example, setting up a WhatsApp group so people can share their experiences and their results and everything, or even if you like the grief, you know, where were you today? You didn't turn up for your session, that kind of thing. But challenges that we've talked about, for example, they could get together and say, okay, what is it we want to do? I've been on several trips with various companies where they've set their challenge of, for example, something as like London to Paris, cycling London to Paris. A group of cyclists just decided, okay, we're going to do that. That was a challenge. The Three Peaks Challenge is something quite strenuous. That's in the UK. Over the last time I did Three Peaks, actually, it wasn't within a 24-hour period, which was the official Three Peaks Challenge, but just for 3 days over a long weekend, we climbed the three peaks in the British Isles, up in Scotland, Ben Nevis, Scafell Pike in England, and Snowdon in Wales. We did that over a long weekend, which was great. But in the meantime, they did some training to get to the level where they could manage that. So setting some achievable goals, and to have the measurements and to the small steps along the way to break down the big thing into small workable chunks. And of course, to help do that, there are loads of apps and things like that. I can think of various wearable tech. Google have just bought out Fitbit, as you may or may not know, but that means that it's likely Fitbit, which is good as it is likely to be developed even more by Google. And they're in the then the other things similar to that are available.
They sound like some great ideas there, Peter. You mentioned about individualizing things as well, which I think is really key, because I know a lot of what we see out there is a lot of fitness or well-being by PDF. And my problem with that is it's very generalized ideas. It's assuming that everybody's the same, you know, which we know isn't the case. So generalized approaches tend to not to work very well for mental well-being or for physical well-being. So I'm glad you mentioned the individualized angle. Also, you mentioned about being fun, having the accountability, setting challenges, using apps. So great to bring technology into it as well, setting goals and having metrics. I think there's so many ways people can use to motivate their teams if they want to. It's just about how creative they're willing to be. So taking into account then that the pandemic has kind of changed the world and the way we do things in terms of health and well-being, what do you see as the future of workplace physical activity?
I think the future is bright. That's wishful thinking perhaps on my part, from given the kind of work I do. But the whole pandemic thing has made people understand the necessity of keeping themselves healthy, if for no other reason, so they don't succumb to this awful illness. And, you know, the first thing that people realize is if they have got an expanding waistline, that if they start to project this forward, where's it going to go? Where's it going to go from here? So the last year has definitely put people's health and fitness into focus more. And I'd like to think that the individuals within any company organization would have some influence on the managers and the board of directors, etc., even if those managers and board of directors themselves don't come up with it. So there would be a little bit of peer pressure, perhaps a little bit of employee pressure to try and establish this kind of well-being approach that we've been working on for so long. And I can see that there'll be a combination of a hybrid approach to training, like some on-site fitness training for those companies lucky enough to have a gym or an outdoor space that we can use for outdoor fitness training, and the remote fitness training for those that either continue to work from home or they can put into a boardroom. For example, our personal trainers, Zumba instructors, don't need to be with the people still. So there could be a room set aside like a boardroom or a meeting room on occasion to do some classes and physical activity there. So I think that there's going to be a growth in this kind of thing. I think gym membership may well pick up again, but I think people have realized how, perhaps quite often, how little they use their gym membership and are starting to wonder if their money can be better spent. And in terms of companies with this, I know there's a tendency in the past just to sign people up for corporate membership of gyms, but I think maybe companies will be asking, is a corporate membership of a gym where they just say to people, go along to the gym and you can have corporate membership? It doesn't quite work in the same sort of way as the in-person one-to-one training works, with the social element of it thrown in that we've talked about.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I know it can feel sort of a bit like a tick box sometimes, kind of having a corporate gym membership, because I guess the important thing is yes, it's nice to be able to say that we offer a corporate gym membership, which is great to attract new employees, potential new employees. But I think the important thing is really to be able to have people that are using that gym membership and having reasons, have been motivated to do so. I think that's really key. And I like the fact you said there that, because previously in the world, it was all face-to-face pretty much, wasn't it, fitness? Now it's gone the other way. Things are all digital. Hopefully, we're going to find that happy medium where we do what you say and, you know, have a hybrid between the two, where maybe people can gather together in a boardroom, or they're working from home, they can log on to Zoom or MS Teams and take part in fitness sessions. Because I think out of this pandemic, I think we'll be more creative around these things as well, and be more creative in what we classify as exercise as well, thinking that it can be movement. It doesn't have to be in a gym lifting weights. It can be all sorts of movement, whether it's joining you for your Zumba Gold class with all the rest of the over 60s, or doing a park run, whatever it is. Sorry to remind you about that. Sorry. It's just going to enhance our creativity, the way we think about doing these things, because it's not a one size fits all approach. There's definitely different ways of doing this. It's just the only limits are our creativity, really. So is there anything that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you, Peter?
Another good question. Well, yes, I suppose one of the things I haven't talked about, of course, is bringing in some expertise to help out. These things, although I sometimes forget how much myself and my team know about this kind of thing, because it's how we earn our living. And of course, if you want some expert advice, a good way to get that is to speak to an expert. And And it doesn't have necessarily have to be our company, although we particularly look at doing fitness training at the place of work. But that includes the individuals as well. And all of our personal trainers in our team are experts in their own way, whether that's delivering corporate fitness or to individuals working from home, etc. So, yeah, that's the thing I would like to add. If people just want to have a conversation to talk it through, rather than what I find, for example, you think you mentioned tick box exercise of signing people up to a corporate membership of a gym. The other thing that often happens is a group of enthusiastic people say, let's start a company gym. And they set aside a room and fill it with expensive equipment and nobody turns up. Because you need more than a room and expensive equipment to get people to use it. And this is how we've become successful, starting off small by helping out in a company, in their company gym, and actually having somebody there. And as was on a film that I saw not long ago, Build It and They Will Come. You know, if we have the gym and have somebody in there, then it'll attract people to come to the gym and they can then make benefit of it because they're shown how to work the equipment and they're motivated to do more, etc., etc. And all of a sudden that person that starts by doing 5 or 6 repetitions of exercise will suddenly find that they can do 10 and 20, 30 and 40. And before you know it, they've got to doing an hour of fitness training and they're doing the 1500 workout that we talked about.
Okay, I like that. I like the idea of actually, yeah, speaking to people, right? Because that's the thing. It's you're from the fitness world, so you know you've probably forgotten so much that you don't realize how long it took you to pick those things up over all the years you've been a PT. And yeah, when we see someone who might not know anything about exercise, it's easy to forget how difficult it is in the first stages to know what to do. You know, I'm sure if I ask you, say, what exercise could I do for my calves or for my lats, you'd know immediately a whole range of exercises where not everybody is privy to that expert knowledge. So I think, yeah, for companies to, even if it's to get them started, speak to some people who know, or even within the organization, who know what they're talking about with this stuff. And then you can start putting into action things that are going to be beneficial to people rather than things that might seem like they work, but in the long run might just demotivate people. So Peter, we started off by, covered quite a bit of ground today. We talked about the importance of health champions, which I think was a great suggestion, especially you mentioned if it comes from the top down. So someone who's more senior will have more sway in getting these things rolling. And that if a manager doesn't feel they're the right person to be that health champion, they could reach out to this person and almost offload it, for want of a better phrase, offload it to that person. I think that's a great idea. We talked about setting aside time, not using the commute before work or the commute after work, not filling, replacing that time. Now the commute's not there, replacing that with meetings. It's about seeing that time as maybe time that people could use for their own well-being and not giving people back-to-back meetings all day where there's no time to do anything in between. I think that's key. And I liked a lot of the ideas you talked about around motivation, individualizing what the offering is for people, incorporating an element of fun, adding accountability within team members, setting challenges aside, using apps and setting goals and having metrics that people can work to. You know, one person might want to drop a dress size, another person might want to be able to run an extra 5K, whatever it is, but individualizing things, because that ties in so nicely to the things I talk about in the world of mental health. It's never about these generalized approaches. They might sound good on paper, but they very rarely work in the real world. So I think you've given us some really, really good food for thought, Peter, and hopefully it's inspired the people who are listening to want to get their team members on track and start or even increase whatever they're doing on a physical activity level. So I always like to finish on a nice light note with my guests with a quick game of 50-50. But 50-50, I'm going to give you two options. I want you to answer as quickly as possible with no hesitations whatsoever. So are you ready, Peter, for your 10 questions?
Yes. Do you see the delay there?
Bit of a delay. That wasn't even a broadband delay. That was just your brain ticking over. Okay, indoor or outdoor exercise?
For me, outdoor.
Shorts and T-shirt or jogging suit outside?
Shorts and T-shirt.
Oh, I thought you might have been a shell suit man.
Be bold, start cold.
Love it. Mr. Motivator or Joe Wicks?
I've seen Mr. Motivator on TV recently. I think they wouldn't be my best choice, but Joe Wicks, probably.
Joe Wicks. Okay. After a tough workout, bath or a shower?
Shower.
Early riser or night owl?
Early riser.
Books or Kindles?
Kindle.
Michael Bublé or Ozzy Osbourne?
Oh, Ozzy, of course.
Okay, you've passed. Congratulations. Cardio or weights?
Yeah, they're both relevant. That's not a fair question.
You've got to pick one.
Okay. Last year cardio, this year weights. How about that?
I'll let you have that. Music or silence while exercising?
Silence.
Silence. Okay. The beautiful sound of silence. Well, Peter,
if you're doing outdoor exercise, listen to nature.
Well, listen to the sound of the people in your group, the pain, the screams of anguish, and the tears.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
Well, Peter, I want to thank you for taking the time to come onto the Headstrong Talk Show and share your wisdom with myself and our listeners. Can you just let everyone know how they could contact you if anyone wants to carry on the conversation with you?
Sure. If you want to speak to me direct, you can call my landline number, which is 01908-678701. But it's probably best if you either go through our website for Celebrate Health and Fitness Limited. We're based in Milton Keynes. I think there might be another one called Celebrate in America. So it's probably best not to contact them. But Celebrate Health and Fitness Limited in Milton Keynes. And then it's an email address is probably the best way totally, which is peter.moorhead@celebratehf.co.uk.
And is the website the same as that?
Yes, it is. It's all the W's, celebratehf.co.uk.
Brilliant.
The HF standing for health and fitness.
Okay, thanks. So if anyone wants to get in touch with Peter, you know exactly how to get hold of him now. So Peter, thank you for coming on to the Headstrong Talk Show today. And I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into this episode. And everyone have a great day. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Peter, catch you soon.
Thanks, Jonathan. Bye now.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Headstrong Talk Show. If you like what you just heard and would like to automatically receive future episodes of the show, you can subscribe to the show through Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. And if you'd like to get in touch with me through social media, you can find me on YouTube as Jonathan Pittam, Twitter at Jonathan Pittam, and also Jonathan Pittam on LinkedIn. But if you're not a social media type, you can get in touch with me the old-fashioned way through my website at www.mindbodyconsulting.co.uk.